Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for another fun and fur-filled hour of Fervently Speaking, hosted by pet lifestyle and industry expert, top dog Eileen Proctor. Nationally renowned as America's Canine Connections Coach, the top dog has a knack of sniffing out and sharing information about products, services, activities, and news that improve the quality of life for pets and the people who love them, all in inimitably entertaining style. Whether it's dogs, cats, critters, you name it, the top dog has really got her paws on the pulse of America's pet-loving society. It's time to sit, stay, and pick up your ears for Fervently Speaking and your host, top dog, Eileen Proctor.
And I welcome you to another fun and fur-filled episode of Fervently Speaking, and we are live on Blog Talk Radio, the Boomer and Babe station, every second and fourth Wednesday. That's hump day, my favorite day of the week, as everybody knows. And we try to bring you all sorts of great information that's going to help you and your pet enjoy a better quality of life together. And as America's Canine Connections Coach, I bring you information about products, services, events, and activities. And we are getting so many people that are listening both live and archived, and then sending emails about topics that they're interested in hearing more about. And so what I thought we would do this week is to respond to some of those, because we normally have a show that's on one topic for the entire hour. But instead, I decided, because we're getting all of these requests, I'm going to cover a number of different topics over the course of this episode, and that way a lot of people are going to get their answers to their questions. Not coincidentally, the information that is being asked for is important and relevant to our lives with our pets, and a lot of it is found in my book that is titled Top Dog's Top Tips for Tip-Top Dog Care, What Your Best Friend Wants You to Know. And it's a nice book. It really is. I mean, I've heard that from a lot of people. It's just 96 pages long. It's good for readers of all ages because it's written in the wit and wisdom of the top dog, yours truly. And I want you to know that it's good for people who are both accomplished dog owners or newbies in terms of bringing a fur friend into their house. But it really does focus on a lot of different areas. And those include areas like how to add the dogs to your family, dogs or cats to your family. The time of the season, we've got a whole series of articles that are ranging from the cold weather, going through the spring, then the summer, and then heading back into the holiday season on how to pet-proof your holidays. Responsible pet ownership and how it's a family affair, and everybody really gets involved with it. And then also, we are also finding out about fun things, all sorts of different things that you need in order to be able to have a great time with your pet and impress people at parties, by the way. So we're going to get started on the show. And the first question that was asked was by, actually, his name is John, and John was contacting us from Chicago. So hello to John in Chicago. If you are listening today, I hope you are. We're going to answer the questions that you have regarding allergies, pet allergies, and that is something that a lot of people ask about. I believe that the question that John was asking was not about what happens if your pet has allergies, but what happens if you are having allergies around dogs. John says that he absolutely wants to have a pet in his life and just cannot, for the life of him, find a pet or a way to be able to incorporate it due to his allergies. So let me just say, quite honestly, I've always thought that the cruelest twist of fate that my life would take would be if I developed an allergy to animals, particularly dogs. But the fact is that 10 to 15% of Americans suffer from pet allergies, and cat allergies are twice as common as dog allergies. So John was particularly asking about about dogs, so let's stick with that for right now. Many people try allergy shots in order to be able to have them be able to weather the storm of pet allergies, but usually that doesn't really eliminate all of the allergic symptoms. The informal estimates are about 50% of the success rate after 3 to 4 years, okay, of shots, of the full series of vaccinations. So shots really aren't the cure-all, and they can be pretty painful. I know the joys of doggy ownership will overcome that, but I want to point out that contrary to the belief that the allergic symptoms are caused by the fur, they're normally a result of reaction to the animal's saliva or their urine, or most often the dander, and those are the dead skin flakes that you find on a pet. You'll see it's like flaky, kind of looks like dandruff. And these common allergens are found clinging to the pet's fur and skin, but they also get embedded within the carpeting. They settle on the furniture. They even float through the air, you know, kind of like a bad version of snowflakes when they come down. But we try to make sure that people will be able to not have to forego their phyto fixes by trying some of these housekeeping tips that'll keep the symptoms under control. So, John, if you're listening and anybody else has been wondering about this, you can prevent the accumulation of pet allergens in your home by placing plastic mattress and pillow covers on your bed. I know that I have those there, even though I am not allergic at all. Those actually helped. The other day I spilled something. I was taking cough medicine and I spilled it all over my bed, and luckily I had my plastic protection there. So, by the way, also the plastic protection helps if you have puppies that you've decided are allowed to sleep on your bed and they have a transgression in the middle of the night. It'll also save your mattress. So the plastic mattress and pillow covers really do help. You can replace carpeting with hardwood flooring or the artificial flooring, but any kind of hard flooring or tile. And you can put washable throw rugs down on the floors as well. And you want to clean all your surfaces frequently. You just want to be able to wipe it down. I use a natural cleaner. All right, I lie. I don't really clean my home, but when it gets cleaned, we use vinegar as opposed to any of the harsh detergents or the difficult to say are environmentally friendly types of products. So I use vinegar a lot. It doesn't smell so good. You kind of smell like a salad for a while in your house, but it really does help to pick up that dander. You're going to want to cover your sofas with sheets to prevent those dander deposits and wash them along with the dog bedding and toys that you may have on a regular basis. I used to have, but I don't anymore. I used to have a leather couch, which really did help. That's an ideal sofa material for allergy sufferers because it's easy to wipe down and the dander doesn't get embedded into the fibers of, you know, the microfiber that's so popular now, or corduroy or any of those fabric-y things. So leather, keep leather in mind if you're shopping for a new sofa. You're probably going to want to use a vacuum that incorporates a HEPA filter to stop allergens from flying right through the bag. And yes, it's true, it'll suck it right off of the furniture and the rugs, but it could go right through the bag and wind up back into your household environment. So make sure you try to find a vacuum that incorporates a HEPA filter. And electrostatic air filters and inexpensive disposable allergen air filters on your central heating and cooling systems are also going to help clean the air distributed throughout your house. Make sure you change them on a regular basis. If they say they should be changed every 60 days, I would make it every 30 days. The dog hair really does accumulate in those filters, and the more you can clean them out, the better it's going to be for the allergy sufferers and also for your utility bills. You will definitely cut down on the utility bills because they'll make it easier for the air to recycle. A lot of people are allergic to a lot of different things, including dogs, and this may sound counterintuitive, but you're going to want to open your windows occasionally to let those airborne pet dander flakes out, but make sure it's only when the pollen count is low so that you're not bringing in a different allergen that could cause problems for you or other members of your family, including your dogs, by the way, because some dogs are allergic to pollen. Yeah, I'm going to say something that I know it's going to be emotionally difficult to hear, but you may need to keep your pet out of your bedroom or certain other rooms that you spend a lot of time in. and you don't have to shut the door on them altogether so you don't see them or hear them. Baby gates are extremely helpful in keeping pets out of the areas that you don't want them in, as are a very reliable sit-stay or out command. We've discussed the importance of basic commands in previous episodes of Fervently Speaking, but having those down, stay, out, no commands are very important, and eventually you won't even need to have something like a baby gate to ward off your doggy's affections in the rooms that you do not want them to be in. Last episode, we did speak with a professional groomer, Laura Russell. It was a great episode, but she was talking about all sorts of things that had to do with dog grooming at home as well as professionally, but we didn't really bring up the concept of bathing your dog frequently with a mild shampoo to make sure that his skin does not produce any undue amounts of dander, okay? That actually can help if you use a mild shampoo on a pretty frequent basis. It can prevent overdrying of the skin. And frequent brushing outside the home, don't do it inside the home, even wearing a face mask could also provide temporary relief. So brush out that extra fur that might be floating around, the dander flakes, et cetera, while you're outside. And finally, you're going to want to wash your hands and face thoroughly and change your clothes immediately after direct contact with any pet that seems to give you more of an allergic reaction than others. So I will now share with you some of the best pets that the American Kennel Club lists as, quote, low dander. So no guarantees here. If you don't agree or if you've tried this and it hasn't worked, blame the AKC, not the top dog, all right? So take a look at the dogs that basically have hair as opposed to fur. You know what I'm talking about. It's thinner. It's not fluffy. It normally doesn't have an undercoat. A wire hair dog, they also qualify as low dandered. So some of the good ones are Bichon Frises or poodles, any kind of terrier, like a Kerry Blue Terrier or a wire hair fox terrier. The Malteses are also very good. They have long hair, but it's kind of a low dander type of dog, and because it's got the hair rather than the fur, people consider it to be non-shedding, although everybody sheds, every dog sheds, every person sheds. But the Malteses and the Shih Tzus and the Lhasas are also very good for people who might be having a problem with the dogs and allergies. Try a Portuguese water dog. Hey, President Obama did it, and he's not complaining. So the Portuguese water dogs are wonderful. Schnauzers, soft-coated Wheaton Terriers. There are a lot of great dogs that are considered low dander and non-shedding. By the way, the Chinese crested and Mexican hairless, they look pretty darn funny, but they absolutely will help you cut down on any hair that may be floating around, and they're also considered low dander. And just to finalize what I hope is a very complete question for John and everybody else out there who is interested in knowing about what to do if they're itching for a dog or from one, these breeds are very prone to high level of dander, and therefore they are not recommended for those who are afflicted with those type of pet-related allergies. So cross these guys off your list. It doesn't mean they're bad dogs. It just means from an allergy perspective, you may want to think twice. And those include Basset Hounds and Cocker Spaniels, the Sharpei, Dachshunds, and Dobermans. Those are the very short-haired ones that you really want to stay away from. On the longer hair, Afghan Hounds are not recommended. Cocker Spaniels, German Shepherds, who, by the way, they shed 365 days a year, and if it is a leap year, it'll be 366. So if you're concerned about shedding as being the cause of your allergies, German Shepherds will be off your list. Irish Setters and Springer Spaniels, any of the field dogs are probably not your best bet as relates to a pet that will allow you to be able to pursue your poochie passions and bring them into your house if you're allergic. So I hope that provided a lot of good information for you to be able to find ways to be able to enjoy pet parenting to a dog in the near future. And thank you, John, for emailing in. By the way, if anybody else has any questions, we won't be able to cover them on this show, but you can always send them to me at topdog@fervently speaking.com. fervently speaking.com. And fervently, of course, is spelled F-U-R, fervently speaking.com. And I will be glad to either dedicate a whole show or part of a show to your question in the very near future. All righty. I have got Mary Grace. She contacted me and said, I've heard horror stories about adding pets to my home, and I don't want to upset the balance. I guess it sounds like her dogs and cats and critters are all getting along great. But what's the best way to introduce another dog to my household pack? And that's a really great question, Mary Grace, because so many people don't do preliminary research to find out what dog, if any, would fit in with their pack. And that's either from a breed perspective, a gender perspective, any type of aspect that you're thinking about. They just go out and bring in a dog and expect them all to get along. But it really takes a lot of patience and effort to successfully blend your families into a single harmonious unit. I mean, think of the Brady Bunch. You know, just think about the Brady Bunch. Did Greg, Peter, Bobby, Marcia, Jan, and Cindy all get together right from the start? Of course not. And for so many seasons, they had their issues as well. So those were intelligent people. All right, they weren't intelligent, but they were cute people, and they had their issues getting along. So why would you think that a new dog being introduced into the home would have any easier a time fitting in with the dynamic that already exists with your other pets? So I'm going to refer to the pets that are already in the house as the resident pet as opposed to the new pet. And whenever more than one dog lives in a household, there's a dominance hierarchy that's established, and that's brought on by a number of factors. It could be the individual canine personality traits, the breed characteristics, and all of the outcomes that they have during their initial reaction. So initially, the resident dog is likely to be dominant over the newcomer, the new dog, but it could change over time. So you got to give them a chance. Unless there's really bad snarfing and gnashing of teeth or bloodshed, you've got to let them work it out as to who's going to be the alpha dog and who's going to be the zeta dog. It's really up to them to decide. There's really very little that we humans can do to guarantee the outcome. But you don't want to give up without trying, all right? You want to make sure that the new shaggy siblings are as stress-free as possible, and you can help them by getting things off on the right paw with a number of these suggestions. Here we go, Mary Grace and everybody else who wants to know some tips about introducing a new pet into the home. First of all, you want to make those introductions on neutral turf, maybe at a local pet-friendly business like a doggy daycare or a grooming shop even, or in an unfamiliar fenced park so that the resident dog is less likely to view that newcomer as a territorial intruder. And by not being on their own turf, the new dog is not going to be invading space, not going to be picking up the resident dog's toys, and doing things that could otherwise set that resident dog off. If there's more, by the way, than one resident dog in the house, you want to introduce each of them to the new dog individually so that they don't have that ganging up concept, you know. Remember, Greg, Peter, and Bobby love to gang up on one of the girls because, you know, they are a pack of their own. And so you want to make sure that each one gets to sniff out the new dog in private, so to speak, and form their own conclusions. And they can actually impact the opinions of each of the other pets that might be in your household. Those introductions often work best when the dogs are loosely leashed and controlled by separate handlers. By no means should you force your dog to be on a leash, because that kind of makes him feel like the underdog, if you will, if the other dog's just allowed to roam freely. So if you can have two people there, each loose leash holding each of the pets in question for these introductions, that really works out really well. And try, I know that it's human nature to try to avoid a problem before it happens, but try to not prematurely jerk back on the leash or either of the dogs in any way to provide the tension that's unnecessary. It causes like negative behavior, and you just don't want that. So just try to let them work it out and sniff it out and jolly it up. I like to, you know, hey, look, how you guys doing? What good dogs? And yes, I talk like that. I know not everybody does, but it helps them to be able to sense that everything is going to move along smoothly. And because dogs pick up on our anxiety levels or our happiness levels, it's important that we set the pace by being in the right frame of mind when we're introducing them. You want to use positive reinforcement to encourage the good manners and foster a really relaxed atmosphere between the pets. Use treats if you are sure there's no food aggression issues. Don't just bring it out there, because if you don't know this new dog that well, you don't know how they're going to react if a treat is put in front of your pet. You want to talk in soothing and friendly tones. You want to praise good behavior, like if they're doing play bows or polite sniffing. Keep an eye open, though, if the dog starts leaning backwards on its haunches, or if its ears flatten out or is staring for too long, two or three issues, casually take the dog to separate areas so that they can get over whatever is ticking them off at that particular moment, and you can try again in just a little while, all right? I do want to point out, this has been asked of me a lot of times, and although Mary Grace didn't ask it, it's important to point this out. A lot of people say, oh gosh, my dog doesn't like another dog, its hair is going up on its back. Well, let me clarify what that's all about. That action of the hair going up is a term called piloerection. Piloerection. It's kind of like a mohawk hair that a lot of dogs get down their back. But it doesn't mean aggression, unless it's accompanied by one or more of the visual or even audible reactions that I mentioned before, growling, barking, leaning back on the haunches, ears flattening out, long, prolonged stares. That doesn't mean that. It just means that the dog is aroused. It could be in a very good way. I mean, think about yourself, and I know this is a G-rated show, but you know, when we get aroused, it could be both for the good or the bad. It could be pleasurable or it could be fearful. So just because your dog's hair goes up on its back does not mean that it is going to attack or that it's unhappy. It's just an arousal mechanism. And now that you know the word piloerection, you are going to be awesome at the next party you go to. Say it with me. It's fun. Piloerection. There you go. And the last thing I want to point out about the introduction phase is that puppies in particular are characteristically ill-mannered, hyperactive. They're just not schooled in the nuances of doggy social graces. So you want to make sure that you're keeping those times when they're being introduced to the resident dog, keep them short, keep them supervised, keep those play periods supervised, because they've got those sharp little teeth that they could accidentally nip at the older dog or the resident dog. And that can, I mean, I know that I don't like it when it happens to me, but again, I can reason it out. I'm an intelligent human. But dogs, you know, you just don't know how they're going to react to it. So especially if there's puppies, let's make sure everything is fully supervised and short so that both the puppy and the resident dog have the best chance of success in the introductions. And then once the dog's investigative time is done and put to the side, and they, you know, there doesn't seem to be any issue, there's no fear, there's no aggression or anything like that, try moving the interactions to more of your home turf, probably your yard, and then finally inside your home. And then to keep that assimilation process smooth, I recommend that you isolate your resident dog's toys and treats and food bowls, all those high collateral items over which there could be protection or possessiveness. Isolate them. Get them out of the way during the initial times that they're together. You want to always defer to your resident dog's hierarchy. Greet him first, feed him first, praise him first. Big, big good boys and good girls to those dogs, so that they feel like they are still, you know, king of the hill. And that, by the way, I've done that every time I've introduced a new pet to my home, and it just always works. So now that I've got multiple dogs, I've got the four dogs and the cat. You know, Disney, that I've mentioned on many, but my 15-year-old border collie, we just had her birthday party the other day, and all the dogs were together. Disney got everything first. She got the first treats. She got the first hugs. She got the first recognition. And that is something that you do in the beginning and continue it throughout. Come on, you know, age does deserve some social grace going on there, and I think that it's the least we could do for having them be around first to help teach the other pets the right way to behave based on our doggy rules in our house. make sure that you keep the resident dog's feeding and exercise and play and sleep routines as consistent as possible to what it was before you brought in that new pet. You don't want to disrupt their way of being just because there's a new pet around. And so for that reason, if it means that your dog likes to sleep in your room, your resident dog, keep the new dog in a separate room or keep it in a crate. Keep it away, especially if it's a puppy and it's going to cry or whine or need to go out and get taken out in the middle of the night so that it doesn't have any kind of potty accident. You know, don't disrupt your resident dog because that could create resentment. And if the sleep is disturbed or the eating is disturbed, those are the two quickest ways to get anybody, human or four-legged, into a bad mood. And make sure that you have individual quality time between you and the resident dog and the new dog separately as well as together. Again, you want to make sure that everybody finds their place in your pack order. Now, if the introduction of this new dog into your household doesn't go smoothly, you know, enlist the assistance of an animal behaviorist or trainer because they can see things that we can't. There may be something very strange that's going on that you don't even know about, and they will be able to pick up on it. So, because the longer and more often those negative interactions occur, the more difficult it's going to be to get them to coexist peacefully. Okay? So above all, be patient. It is not uncommon for a truly harmonious, what I call canine kumbaya, kumbaya, to take weeks or even months to fully manifest. And so give it time, give it patience. And last tip, Mary Grayson, this is probably more than you ever thought you wanted to know about how to introduce a new pet to your home, but if you are adopting, and of course you know the rally cry of the top dog, adoption is the best option. Bring your pet to the place where you are meeting the new dog to see how they get along. Check out the interactions. Ask your adoption agency whether or not the dog or cat that you're asking to bring into your home has any issues with any particular size dog, breed dog, gender dog. You want to make sure that you are setting up everything for success in the very beginning so that you have a lifelong relationship with as many pets as possible. So, Mary Grace, thank you so very much for emailing in to Fervently Speaking. Again, the email address for anybody who's thinking of questions right now is topdog, that's me, topdog@ferventlyspeaking.com, and fur is F-U-R, ferventlyspeaking.com, and we will make sure that we try to address any of your questions or issues in future shows. So I mentioned before dog parks as a place to be able to potentially bring your pet to meet a new dog that you're going to be introducing. And that is another question that was brought up. And I'm not sure if it's Daniel or Danielle that sent this in, but Daniel or Danielle, it's kind of spelled funny. Anyway, and this is from somebody all the way out in Maryland. So sorry if I butchered your name, Daniel or Danielle from Maryland, but you were asking about dog parks, and your comment was that you were not particularly thrilled with dog parks because you've seen so many issues at dog parks. You wanted to know the top dog's opinion and whether or not you're a bad parent if you do not bring your dog to dog parks. So I'm going to address that right now. You know, it's interesting. When you're walking by a dog park, you know, you see dozens of adorable canine kids joyously interacting in beautiful landscape fencing and beaming parents standing by, usually ignoring them. Yeah, and that's the biggest problem that I have with dog parks. You know, quite frankly, when you bring your dog to a dog park, it is your responsibility not just to let him go and burn off calories and burn off energy, but to make sure that they're acting suitably. And that, unfortunately, is not what I see a lot of times when I'm riding by the dog park. I see people with a Starbucks in one hand and a muffin in the other. They're chatting with friends. They're not even looking in the direction of their dogs. And it's really important that you stay focused for your dog's safety and well-being as well as that of the other dogs that are there. Because, first of all, not every dog is super social. Sometimes they need to be introduced. And as we talked about, the resident dog that is going to be a little offended perhaps by a new dog, that comes into the home. The same thing is true for dogs that kind of feel they own the park. Now, this is my park, and you will follow my rules. And there's an alpha-zeta order that goes on at the dog park as well. And bringing in one new dog could totally mess up the mix of the dynamic that's been established from the dogs that were already there. Recently, I had gone to California, and I had hoped that I would be able to find a nice, quiet, unpopulated dog park for my dog Cassie and Happy. I brought them along with me on the trip. Cassie is not overly social with other dogs. She won't look for fights, but she doesn't like other dogs in her face, and she'll snarf if a dog does come up and kind of breathe right into her face. And so as a result, I try not to give her that many settings that would cause her to act in ways that could be considered aggressive or uncomfortable to other dogs. Happy, on the other hand, loves other dogs, runs and plays and romps and goes to daycare all the time. And I have no issues that she doesn't try to become alpha. She's not a dominant dog. She just likes to have fun. And I could start singing, dogs just want to have fun. And that's who she is. That's, her name is Happy, and she just fits the bill. But we were at this dog park in Southern California, and we had it all to ourselves to start. And about 20 minutes into our ball throwing and romping around, two Basenjis came in, two Basenjis from the same family. And their owners had them on the leash, and they brought them in. And immediately, these two Basenjis came over to start sniffing my dog. So I did the right thing. I had my eye on Cassie, and I walked her away because I knew that she wouldn't want to interact at all. And so what I did was I gave her the recall command of, come Cassie, come, and she came, and I put her on her leash, and I just had her to the side, away from the other dogs. Happy jumped up on a bench and was just kind of looking around and sniffing and wagging her tail at these two Basenjis. And without warning, one of the Basenjis lunged for Happy, grabbed her by the scruff, and tried to yank her off the bench, and she shrieked. And once she shrieked, the other Basenji came on, and they tag-teamed. They both started aggressing on Happy. And Happy's about 17 pounds, and these Basenjis were quite larger. Well, we were all horrified. I was horrified. My friends that were with me were horrified. And the owners of the Basenjis were horrified. And we were able to separate them without any blood. And basically, I asked them, is this your dog's first time to the dog park? And they said, well, actually, it's not, but we normally bring them separately. And this is the ganging up thing I was talking about when I was talking about introducing the dog. You got to be careful because dogs act very differently when they're with their parents versus when they're not, when they're with their siblings and when they're not, when they're in their home environment and when they're not. And so for whatever reason, one of these Basenjis decided that Happy was a threat and just wanted to prove dominance immediately. And it wasn't a good situation. I was very fortunate that there was two or three different sections to that dog park that were fenced off separately for big dogs versus small dogs. And so these people took their Basenjis to an area that was not populated by any other dogs so that they could throw their balls. And that's kind of how that ended. But here are a few tips on making sure that if you're going to bring your dog to a dog park, and again, it's not my favorite thing to do. The dogs have not been pre-screened. The parents aren't always looking. But here are a few tips that I think are important for you to keep in mind for those times that you may want to try it out and have your dogs go and take a walk or a romp in the park. All right? Number one, you got to be realistic about your dog's personality and behavior. The bark parks are not testing grounds. They're not proving grounds to see if your dog is social or for him to get over a bad experience he may have had somewhere else. Any kind of aggressive, antisocial, or toy possessive behavior in dogs is just not appropriate. And really, unspayed females in season, also probably not a good idea. I do believe in spaying and neutering pets, but I am not the spay-neuter police. And male dogs that are not neutered, they are obvious that you can see that that's a situation. And you can steer clear from them if you want to. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with them. I'm just saying that certain behaviors are more prevalent, like dominance and things like that. But you can't see an unspayed female that is in season or in heat. You really can't see it. And so as a responsible pet owner, if that is the situation with your female, please keep it away from the dog park. Even a few days before and after they are in season, because they leave a scent behind before, during, and after they are in season. And they and that does tend to create certain issues as it relates to the behavior of even the nicest of dogs. Whether the dog is spayed or neutered isn't even the point. So keep the unspayed females that are in season away a few days before, a few days after, and during that, that time. All of the dogs that are going to the bark park, to the doggy park, really need to understand and respond to those basic verbal obedience commands, especially the come, stay, no, and leave it. Leave it's a big one because there may be a toy that is causing possessiveness issues, and you want your dog to not be at the root of any of that possessiveness going on there. So leave it is very important. Also, if a dog is sniffing in the face of a dog, say like my dog Cassie, would not be one that you would want your dog to be sniffing in the face of. So you may want to say leave it if you were watching your dog and saw that your dog was having an issue with another dog or another dog seemed to be lifting its lip, doing the Elvis, as I call it. So you want to make sure that those basic obedience commands are under control. So that there's no real issues. You're not going to be able to run across the entire bark park to stop your dog or pull your dog off another dog if there is an issue. So the obedience is very important. And as I mentioned before, as an owner, it's your responsibility to make sure that your dog is behaving appropriately. You got to keep an eye on and control the actions of your dog. Excessive rough play or overt dominance, posturing, or deep-throated growling, it's just not acceptable, even if you think your dog doesn't mean anything by it, because other dogs may not or other dog parents may not. And, you know, just as importantly to that, only bring as many dogs as you can realistically handle to the dog park. You know, you don't want to bring 7 or 8 dogs. I know pet sitters that they just leash them all up and bring them all in and just let them all loose all at one time. And, you know, that could be trouble. So make sure that you are able to realistically handle the number of dogs and which dogs you're bringing to the bark park. I have seen, speaking of responsibility from parents, and of course nobody listening to Fervently Speaking would ever do this, so please, you know, I get that. But I have actually seen people leave their dog at the dog park to go handle some errands and leave and then come back later and pick them up. Yes, I've actually seen that. I know you're probably shaking your head just like I am right now because I'm remembering that. I actually saw them leave. I mean, their dog was over on the other side, and they left and just left the dog there. And, you know, seriously, just don't do that, all right? It's not fair to the dog. It's not fair to the other dogs that are there. And anything can wind up happening while you're gone. So, you know, you really need to be a responsible pet owner and keep your eye on your dog and be very present both physically and emotionally and visually with everything that's going on there. One of the things a lot of people don't think about is when you bring your dog to a dog park, you're basically, you know, you're giving them nose-to-nose or nose-to-butt contact with other dogs. And the sharing of that sniffing is a potential breeding ground for all sorts of things like upper respiratory infections. I've seen from the dogs sharing water bowls this thing called viral mouth warts. Okay, you'll see them. They're a little like they look like cauliflower that grow inside the dog's mouth, and it's from drinking water or lifting, grabbing the same ball as another dog might, and getting their germs, their viruses being shared through that. So if you have any hint at all that your dog is not healthy, don't bring your dog to the dog park. And on the same line, you want to make sure that your dog is up to date on vaccinations. Because vaccinations protect your dog from anything that might happen, not the other dog so much. So you want to make sure that they're up to date on their rabies, their distemper, their bordetella. Make sure you speak to your vet to make sure if you are going to be bringing your dog to socialize, whether it's at a doggy daycare or a dog park, you want to make sure that you're up to date on the vaccinations and totally healthy. And one of the other issues that happens a lot, because dogs will be dogs, is when they do the poop and it's down there, there might be eggs that other dogs will sniff, and that is very, very big potentiality for picking up of parasites that can last for a very, very long time. So now the thing I want to say about that is make sure you are leaving your house with poop bags just in case the park has run out. I know a lot of them do provide them, but if they run out, you need poop bags with you, and make sure that you pick up all those solid wastes and dispose of them in the containers that are there for them. If there are no containers, bring them home with you. And, you know, my philosophy is if you manage to dodge a landmine or two that somebody else didn't pick up, just be a good little doobie and be courteous. Pick them up, you know, pick up even if your dog didn't do it. It's you'd want somebody else to do it for you. So it's the pay it forward type of a concept there. All right. If you see that a dog is causing a problem, it is okay to go over and ask the owner to either pay more attention to their dog or ask the owner to leave. And if he or she doesn't comply, because I've seen that too, people get indignant, you know, I was here first, or, hey, my dog's not doing anything, it's your dog being too sensitive. So don't stand on ceremony. If the owner isn't going to comply with your request to take care of its dog, just have your dog say goodbye to his poochie playmates and end the visit for the day and take your dog away from the situation. There's no reason getting into, you know, altercations between the humans. You don't want that for the dogs, so you certainly don't want it for the humans either. So, you know, just if it's not working out for you that day, it's just the universe's way of saying your dog has had enough for the day, and take them away and have a good time at home instead. All right. So the bottom line really about bark parks, about dog parks, is you got to use common sense and respect. All right. And I really do hope that these tips have been helpful to Daniel or Danielle in Maryland and to anybody else who wants to know what they should do, what they should consider when bringing their dog to a dog park. And one final thing I want to say. There are actually dog parks out there that are not city or state owned. Most of them are, but there are some that are private ones and you pay a fee to. And you should expect a slightly higher level of cleanliness, because cleanliness is next to dogliness, you know. And you should expect a higher level of service, of cleaning, of supervision from the owners or the managers of those pay-for-play dog parks. And if, in fact, your dog really does want and need to be social, which I believe every dog should be, they are pack animals and they like to be with their own kind. If, in fact, you do not have a dog park in your area that you feel comfortable with, try finding a doggy daycare that has got trained professionals who will watch your pet for you, play with your pet for you, allow you to leave to do your errands or whatever it is, pick up after your pet, and all the things that might be an issue if you were in a public dog park. So the Top Dog is a huge advocate of good doggy daycares and advises that you might want to look that up in your neighborhood. There are some really great ones out there. All right. So there you go. That was kind of the dogma about dog parks, according to the Top Dog. And that is a lot of good information for you. I promised my friend Char that I would review some topics that had to do with a phyto-friendly garden. And she was asking me particularly, are there certain flowers that are not good to have in the yard, or what ones are non-toxic and the best type of things to have when you are putting together your garden. With the weather changing, a lot of people will be working in their gardens and they're going to want their pets out there either to help them or to play. So no, Char, not all flowers and plants are suitable for yards that the dogs are going to romp around in. So here are some guidelines for creating an environment that is going to be safe and pretty and enjoyable for both you and your pet. As it relates to the type of flowers, it really depends on how much sunlight you have in your yard every day. I happen to have a very sunny yard in the back. I also happen to have a lot of rock, so not everything will be able to grow. You know, those that need heavy-duty soil and watering are probably not going to work well. So for areas that have, let's just say, 4 or more hours of direct sunlight every day, you could look at zinnias or snapdragons. Petunias are also very nice. Petunias for your pet. All right, that was bad. Okay, but anyway, petunias are good. There are different types of perennials that you could put out there. There's a really pretty one. You know, phlox is beautiful. Roses are great, but you got to be making sure that the thorns are taken off and cut back, because if your dog does start to chew on the rose stem, he could cut up his mouth really bad, cut up his throat. So make sure if you do have roses, they're in a removed area of the yard, or you are actually snapping off all of the thorns so your dogs don't have any kind of an issue with those. If you have less than 4 hours of direct sunlight, you could try primroses. Primroses are really nice, the spider flowers. You can look these up, by the way, on Google. Look for the pictures. There's something called a butterfly flower, very, very beautiful. The columbines are great. The nasturtiums are wonderful. I like the turf lilies. They're awesome, awesome, awesome flowers as well. So you can get a lot of different colors and a lot of different variety in there. And those type of flowers do not need a whole lot of direct sunlight. So if you have less than 4 hours, you might want to try those. And then if you've got shade gardens or anything that's got like little to no direct sunlight, except for what filters through your trees or something like that, look for begonias or impatiens and violets and even the coleuses. Or coleae, I guess you'd call them. Those are nice. The hostas are great. I have one that's a particular favorite of mine. Really look this one up. It's called the Queen of the Meadow. It's not available everywhere, and not all of these will be perfect for every area of the country, but a whole lot of beautiful items. But the ones you don't want, here are some that you do not want to have around your pets because they actually can be toxic. All right, so do not have the Japanese yew in there. Foxglove is not a good idea. Nightshade's not very friendly to pets if they get it in their mouths. Jerusalem cherries, that surprised me, but I guess it's because of pits. You don't want the Jerusalem cherry in there. They're the morning glory, I know that everybody loves morning glories, but they're just not pet friendly. So think twice before planting those. Now, most vegetable plants don't pose any kind of toxicity problems, but onions and chives and garlic do have compounds in them that can cause anemia if they're ingested. So you may want to shy away from those or keep them away from your pet. Also, the leafy part of the potato plant and the green part of the potato skin have compounds that are toxic, even in small quantities, so you really want to stay away from those as well. And as I was mentioning about the Jerusalem cherry with pits, certain fruits have toxic chemicals in their seeds and pits, and they've been known to cause seizures. So apple trees, plum trees, cherries, apricot, peach, keep those away from your pets as well. As it relates to making sure that your plants and flowers thrive, before you apply any kind of fertilizing product to the lawn or your vegetables or your plants, really read the label and follow the manufacturer's instructions. If it says that it should be kept away from pets, believe them. Don't hope that that's not the case. Many of the products that I'm talking about are designed to persist in that environment for days or even weeks. So your pet can have repeated exposure to them long after the initial application. So you may want to look to things like recycled kitchen and yard waste. Are you making your own compost? Try some of the new organic fertilizers that are out there. It'll save you money in the long run. Even the organic ones, it might be more expensive because you will not have to bring your pet to the vet to take care of any issues that the chemical fertilizers might cause. Make sure that you try to keep those the insects like the aphids and the spider mites away just by spraying your plants with water. You don't want your dog to be able to be sniffing on them and getting them on their coat. It could cause them to be scratching and itching a lot. And it's soft water. You don't have to really kill it. You don't want to hurt your plants. You know, they've got feelings too. So if you've got really serious insect problems, you could actually add a teaspoon of dish soap to a gallon of water and dispense it through a garden sprayer, and that actually will get rid of a lot of the insects that I'm talking about. And also, in addition to being an irritant to a lot of the insects, the soap is going to break down the protective barriers of their external skeleton. And so I'm talking about the bugs, by the way, not your dogs. So you also want to look for maybe some commercial insecticidal soaps that are less toxic to the chemical alternatives. And in Phoenix, Arizona, we don't have this much of a problem as it relates to mowing your lawn. But lawnmowers can make projectiles out of sticks or rocks. So you want to avoid injuries by putting your pets inside when you're mowing the lawn, just in case one of those stray rocks or sticks gets kicked up by the lawnmower. It'll also help you to not have to worry about running over your paws, your paws of your pets and things like that. So those are some tips for gardening. Char, she didn't actually email me. She actually called me to ask me that question, and I hope that that answered some good questions. Again, most importantly, make sure that you've got the right plant so it's not toxic, and make sure that the lawn reflects what you're interested in. For you, if your pet does not play that much in your yard, then you don't have as many issues. But if the pet is unsupervised in the yard and can get into danger, you want to keep those tips in mind. All righty? Wow, the time is flowing. We've only got time for one more topic, and I think what we're going to do is we're going to be talking about pet safety as it relates to driving in the car. I like to call this road trips with Rover. And just so that you know, I am going to put in a plug for an event that's coming up in Phoenix. It is the Phoenix Pet Expo, and it is on Saturday, April 28th. It's taking place at the University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale, and the hours are 10 to 6, and yours truly, the top dog, is going to be there with many of her top dog paw of approval companies, and we're going to have lots of great information and fun and drawings for you there. It is free admission. It is free parking. I believe it's from 10 to 6. So I hope you're all going to join the top dog and her friends. There's going to be lots of adoption groups and other companies there where you can buy great, great products. At the Phoenix Pet Expo on Saturday, April 28th, you can get more information at phoenixpetexpo.com, or you can, again, email the top dog at topdog@ferventlyspeaking.com. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because this is the third year for the Phoenix Pet Expo, and it's the third year in a row that I have been invited to speak from the main stage. I'm very excited to be back to share a lot of great information as America's Canine Connections Coach with about 10,000 of my closest Phoenician friends that are going to be there that day. And my topic this year is about pet travel, traveling with and without your pets. And we're going to be giving some unbelievably great tips about how to travel with your pet, but what to do if, in fact, your pet can't join you. So when you get to the Phoenix Pet Expo, find out what time the top dog is going to be on the main stage and come on by. I'm going to have some giveaways and including great information and some great products. But the topic that I want to talk about right now is about road trips with Rovers, because, you know, it's not uncommon to see a Poochie perched in a passenger seat of a Porsche. Say that three times fast. Come on. A Poochie perched in a passenger seat of a Porsche, or one that is, you know, just sitting in the front seat of a Ferrari even, okay? The American Animal Hospital Association says that over 62% of owners bring their dogs along for the ride when they hit the road for errands, day trips, and even coast-to-coast excursions. So this is an important topic that I'd like to share information about. The first thing I want to tell you is that most dogs love sitting in the front seat, you know, riding shotgun with their owners, and that's really not a good idea. You really want to make sure that your dog is properly restrained in the back seat with a harness or some type of a leash restraint, because in the front seat of the car, the dog may not be heavy enough to set off the airbag if there is an accident, God forbid, all right? So you do not want your dog riding shotgun next to you, whether or not they're in a seatbelt or not. It's just not the safest thing. It may be cute and it may be fun, but it's not safe. And you want to make sure that when you do have your friend in the back seat And by the way, it could also be in a cage or a crate that's suitably sized for them to be able to stand up and move around. You don't want them all smushed in there, okay? You want to make sure that you are not distracted by having them being able to put their head over your seat and breathe in your ear, whisper sweet nothings in your ear, or lick you. Because if you're distracted, you're not going to be driving well. And I know already people are trying to not have their cell phones distract them, but you know, I've seen people checking texts and making phone calls while they're driving, and having your dog distract you as well is probably not the safest thing in the world. So again, please make sure that your four-legged friend is in a comfortable restraint harness, preferably in the back seat or in a secured, well-ventilated crate that's big enough for him to stand, turn, and lie down. Do not let your dog ride with his head sticking out of an open window. Again, you see dogs do it all the time, but that doesn't mean that it's right or safe. Because foreign objects that can ricochet from the road, flying insects can blow into their eyes or their mouth or their ears, low-hanging branches can cause all sorts of eye injuries. The high-velocity winds when you're speeding down the road, even if you're going the speed limit, but you're speeding down the road at 55, 60 miles an hour, it can actually damage their eardrums. So please keep your dog, you can open the window so that they can get the little tip of their nose out there to get air, but don't let their heads stick out the window. Never let your dog ride in the back of an open truck. I've seen this too, and I cringe every time. You know, first of all, if they're not tethered down, they could fall out if you make a sharp turn or if you get into an accident, or they could jump out if they see something that's of interest to them. So that's the first thing. But especially as the weather is warming up, you know, many a paw has been severely burned, you know, when they've had contact with a hot metal from the bed of a truck. And you just want to make sure that your dogs are not in jeopardy of being heated up. It'll be like being like on a stove, not in an oven, but on a stove. And so you got to really make sure that your dog is not in the open back end of a truck. Speaking of stoves versus ovens, never leave your dog unattended in the car. Because in addition to being vulnerable to kidnapping, and yes, I know dogs that have been stolen out of cars, dogs can quickly develop heat stroke, okay? And that can be very serious, sometimes fatal, because the temperatures in a car can go up over 180 degrees in no time flat. I mean, think about it. Your dog's in a tin can, right? And so you really need to make sure that your dog is not locked up there, even if you have the windows open. You know, just think about it. It can be very devastating to the dog, and there's no reason for it, even if you're going in just for 5 minutes to a store or if you're parked under a shady tree. Sorry, no excuse. Don't do it. You can actually be cited by the police. If somebody does report you and the police come by, you can get a ticket for cruelty to animals or whatever the local laws are in your area. So if you're not going to do it because it's the right thing for your pet, which I know is a fervently speaking listener way of being, you will do what's right for your pet. But anybody that you're talking to, if they're not going to do it for the good of the pet, please make sure that they're aware that this is actually becoming law in certain areas and they could be subject to fines. You want to also make sure if you're traveling long distances with your dogs that you've got the right hydration for them. You want to make sure that the pet is, in fact, stopping every once in a while to answer Mother Nature's calls. And don't forget those poop bags, because you want to make sure that you're picking up after your pet. Before you go on a trip with your pet, you want to consider going to the veterinarian for a checkup prior to that. And that's really important that you bring proof of current vaccination, because if something does happen with your pet and you have to go to a local vet, you want to have all your records with them as well so that they don't over-vaccinate or treat them in a way that they shouldn't be treated. And you want to make sure in your car, this is something that is something that a lot of people don't do. If you're bringing your pet, have a photo of your pet with you. Keep it in the glove compartment just in case you get separated during your travels. It's a way of being able to show it to people and ask them, have you seen this dog? Or to make up lost and found flyers if that happens to happen. I hope it never does, but it wouldn't be the first time if it did. And in closing, some good general advice is also make sure that your dog has got a sturdy leash and collar and has current ID tag that includes the dog's name and your cell phone number. because how often are we home these days, actually? If you're on a trip with your dog, the cell phone number is much more important. Make sure that you make it a habit to secure your dog onto his leash before you open your car door so he doesn't jump out and bolt. And as with the dog parks and in any other aspect of your dog's life, make sure that you teach and enforce those essential and potentially life-saving obedience commands. Sit, stay, down, come. Really, life-saving commands if your dog is in unfamiliar territory. And bring along, by the way, in addition to water and food and treats, bring your dog's favorite toys along so that they don't get bored in the car. Because, hey, even canine kids get hungry and bored on those long car trips, and you don't want them constantly saying, hey, are we there yet? Hey, are we there yet? You talk about the ultimate distraction, right? So there are some great tips. There will be many, many more that are given at the Phoenix Pet Expo on Saturday, April 28th at the University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale, when yours truly, the top dog, America's Canine Connections coach, and the voice of Pet Rescue, will be on the main stage talking traveling with and without your pets. I do hope to be able to see you there. Come on by, shake a paw, and let me know that you are a fervently speaking listener. So I cannot believe it. A full hour has passed since we heard my producer, Pete, introduce me and start the show. We have covered a lot of great information. One more time, if in fact you have an idea for a topic for future Fervently Speakings, make sure that you contact me by email, topdog@fervently speaking.com. I'm hoping that you and your pets are having a wonderful time during this beautiful changing of the seasons, and that you're enjoying the best possible quality of life due to the information that you are getting in Fervently Speaking. This is the Top Dog, Eileen Proctor, America's Canine Connections Coach, and the voice of Pet Rescue, wishing you a great day and a rough life, and reminding you that adoption is the best option. Take care now.
You've been listening to Fervently Speaking with your host, Top Dog Eileen Proctor. To find out more about today's topic or to suggest one for a future show, email topdog@fervently speaking.com. That's topdog@fervently speaking.com. And be sure to tune in every second and fourth Wednesday of the month for another fun and fur-filled episode right here on the Boomer and the Babe Network on Blog Talk Radio. Fervently Speaking is a production of Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.